Shut up, Anthony. Welcome to the show. I am That Chris Gore, joined as always by Anthony Ray Bench on the special episode of the Film Threat Podcast. How's it going, Anthony?
It's going fantastic, Chris. How are you today?
I'm doing good. This is funny. We're actually in two separate cities.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, so wait, where are you right now? I'm just at my place in Pasadena.
I am currently in Carson City.
It seems like this is weird. Like a lot of, you know, podcasts are like, we're in the studio. We've got this great sounding thing. And we are always recording the podcast under the weirdest of circumstances, either outside of a theater or at a restaurant, or, you know, in order for us to be able to do this on a regular basis, we kind of have to just take advantage of, you know, the technology and then also just deal with whatever situation we're in. But we should launch right into it. I know I said shut up, Anthony, at the top of the show, but we have.
I knew you were going to do that too.
Oh, did you know?
I knew.
I know, but like, okay, so we just, you know, there's a lot of movies that you have seen. I have not seen as many films, but we're gonna talk about a whole bunch. But why don't we kick it off with a movie that, as soon as this filmmaker submitted it for review on the site, which if you are a filmmaker, just go to filmthreat.com. And you click on, it's at the very bottom, it'll just say, there's a thing on the Film Threat website where you can just like, I think it just says contact, right? You click on that, that goes directly to me, and you could submit a film, you can send your movie. And now this, the way that most filmmakers send their movies in, because back in the day, people would send us VHS tapes or DVDs, you can just send like, most filmmakers send a Vimeo link with a password. So that's how this movie came in. And the name of the movie is Shut Up, Anthony.
Yep.
And the perfect person to review that film is Anthony, Anthony Ray Bench. So what did you think? So filmmakers out there, if you're listening to this, yes, we will take your submissions. Here's the deal, though. I can't guarantee it's going to get reviewed in a timely manner, right?
Yeah, like, we get so many submissions.
Yeah, we've only got about 10 writers right now that are located all over the country. So, you know, the best way to send us your movie for review is to submit it through that process. I just can't guarantee, you know, that it'll be reviewed in a timely fashion. But it'll go into the queue. And in some cases, you know, like if we know if you can get it to us within 60 days before, you know, it's going to come out, that helps us. 30 days, it's kind of tight, but because we have a backlog, but I think we're kind of catching up. We're actually getting better at this. Let's talk about movies.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Shut Up, Anthony. I mean, you review Shut Up, Anthony, Anthony.
Alrighty. So Shut Up, Anthony is a film about two men whose family have this kind of a sordid history. And due to a scheduling conflict with their parents' timeshare, they are forced to reunite and confront some of their issues. One of them is a theology professor. The other one is a staunch atheist. They are both in different kind of, I guess, places in their love life.
Why are you so hesitant? See, I know what you're going to do.
What am I going to do?
Because I read your review on filmthreat.com.
Uh-huh.
If you go to filmthreat.com and click on the review section, you'll see there's a lot of reviews, but your reviews, I read your review and I don't know, like, see, here's my opinion on this stuff. And I'm just saying in general, when it comes to indie movies.
Yes.
Right. And because it is important when filmmakers get reviewed from Film Threat, we're actually part of the Rotten Tomatoes score.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Which is why I think we're pursued by filmmakers to have their movies reviewed on Film Threat, because a lot of smaller indie movies don't get reviewed by a lot of, you know, larger outlets. So if they can get a good review on Film Threat, it actually impacts the Rotten Tomatoes score, which overall can help promote the film. But
yeah,
you can't judge. I know you. I read your review. I know you. It was a tepid review. But here, the deal is you cannot judge an independent movie with the same criteria that you judge Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 or Alien Covenant or a major theatrical release. All of the people that work on those big studio movies, all of those people are professionals at the top of their game. They're all getting paid well. They have the one thing with these, it's a very rare case where the marketing for a film is off. Usually the marketing for a movie is better than the movie. That's, I think, the problem with a lot of Hollywood movies is the marketing builds up this unfulfilled expectation. All movies are great, and then you see the movie and not so much.
Yeah.
Although I think we could kind of tell from Batman v Superman that movie was fraught with problems just by the marketing.
Yeah.
But independent movies are flawed. Most of them are flawed. Most of them, if an independent movie can focus on one thing and do one thing well, whether it's like the acting is great, or the cinematography is great, or the script is really good. But usually indie movies are, for the most part, there's some technical flaw or something that is not 100%, because, you know, indie filmmakers don't have the resources. So you need to be nicer. But let me hear, having given you my long-winded indie movies, I've always said they're like a bird with a broken wing. I want to nurse it to health. I want to fix that broken wing, and I want this independent movie to fly and be free.
You know what?
And you just want to kill Anthony. You want to kill birds, baby birds.
Oh, okay.
With broken wings.
All right, shut up, Chris. You know, I agree with you 100%, and it's not fair to judge these movies against big budget movies. And I am way more harsher with the big budget movies. This movie had problems, but you know what? It did have some positive stuff too. And I even said in my review, look, the director, Kyle Eaton, I know he has a better film in him, and I am so looking forward to what he does next, because there were glimpses at greatness here. There really were. But unfortunately, some of the negative aspects were, you know, the camera was so shaky, man. Like it made me sick to my stomach, like just watching the camera shake so bad. You know, the main character, Anthony, was completely like unlikable, and he didn't really have.
First of all, I can understand a character named Anthony being unlikable.
Shut up, Chris. But you know, when you have a character, you want to see him kind of, I guess, go on a journey and progress as a human being, or even in some cases, degress. The story didn't do that for the, you know, character of Anthony. And another thing that I really didn't like about the movie, the main characters, Anthony and Tim, would constantly talk over each other, and it was really hard to follow their conversations. Mm. You know, I get that the writer-director, Kyle Eaton, was probably trying to kind of, I guess, nail a sense of realism, because that's how people talk. I mean, me and you do it on the podcast, but it doesn't work in film because it's very distracting. I mean, I feel sorry.
You know what I'm trying to do? I'm trying to not talk over you while you're doing this review.
I felt sorry for the person, whoever has to subtitle that film. But the positives were that some of the shots, like it takes place in a lake town. Mm-hmm. The shots were gorgeous when, you know, the camera wasn't shaky. Like there was some still shots with the water, and it was just, the lighting was perfect. It was gorgeous. And there was some humor that legitimately made me laugh. And there's an actress in the movie. She plays Anthony's girlfriend. Her name is Katie Michelles. Mm-hmm. She was great. She was such, like, you know how when you watch a movie and you see like an actor or an actress that just is leaps and bounds better than everybody else in the movie?
Yeah, well, this happens a lot in indie movies,
yeah,
because, you know, the skill sets and also the access to talent is just not as great as with a studio picture.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. Like, even though I found the character of Anthony unlikable, the actor, Robert A. D'Esposito, was fantastic. Mm-hmm. All the actors were fantastic. I think it was more of a flaw with the writing. But I, you know, it's just, I see greatness in Kyle Eaton, and I really, really want him to succeed. And maybe other people will enjoy this film. Maybe other people will get something out of it that I didn't. But, you know, like I think the cons kind of outweighed the pros in this case.
All right. Fair enough. But I do like that at least you focused on some of the positives, like, because it is one of those things where you look at a lot of these, you know, these indie movies. I'm not talking about like some of the bigger ones, because there's sort of shades of gray in some of these. Like, are they really indie when they're like 5 million? Like, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I like these indie movies that are made for like 50 grand. Those are the ones that I personally really like. So, you'll see in them something like a performance that's really, really great, or they use the limitations actually to their advantage. So, I don't know. Look, I respect your opinion, but I think that there's a different barometer. It's just like with anything. Like, if someone's at a certain level, you can't judge a college essay against a fifth grader. It's just, that's a weird analogy, but you see what I'm saying is it's different levels. You have to judge it at the level and based on the resources that person had. And that's all I'm saying.
I completely understand that.
Okay.
No, well, I do. I'm not trying to kick this film down or anything like that.
No, you're not. Look, I know. I think that you were fair. It just, you know, you have no idea. Like, I'll get hit up by indie filmmakers who are asking me. This I find insulting. Okay, so if you're an indie filmmaker, you're listening to this, and you fall in this category, I'll get indie filmmakers that ask us to take our reviews down. And to those filmmakers, I say, fuck you. You know, like, it's incredibly disrespectful to our outlet, to Film Threat, and then also to our writers that we don't take this into consideration. Look, not everybody's going to love your movie. But I guess they don't have access to call fucking Entertainment Weekly to say, hey, Entertainment Weekly, can you take your review down? But Film Threat, you know, we're expected to jump if an indie filmmaker doesn't like what we do. It's part of the territory. You're going to get some good reviews. You're going to get some bad reviews. But I'll say that, like, there are more outlets covering movies today than movies are being made. So I would say just, you know, move on. But that's just a point of just like two filmmakers in the last week are like bugging me to take old reviews down. Not anything that I had anything to do with personally. So I don't know. I just find it really irritating.
You know,
can you hear the leaf blower coming by my place right now?
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't? Damn. Okay. All right. Because that makes it real. The sound is bad on our podcast. Or if you're an indie filmmaker and you got a bad review on Film Threat, give a shitty review to this podcast. Fine. I don't care. It's your opinion. I respect your opinion. But I actually hope that you give a decent review and consider that Anthony and I have no money. We don't have a studio. There's a leaf blower. There's a leaf blower outside my place right now. Like, you know, so keep that in mind. All right. What's the next film we're discussing?
So I also saw a movie called Buster's Malheart.
Oh, no, this one I'm excited to hear about because you were telling me about it. You tell me about it recently, and I did not see many movies since we last recorded. But tell me about this one.
Yeah, so this one, the basic gist of it is we learn the origin of Buster. He's this strange mountain man. He has a grizzly beard, long hair, kind of looks like me, and he's like calling radio stations and telling them, you know, the inversion is coming, and he's super creepy. And he does these weird things where he breaks into people's houses.
The inversion is coming.
The inversion. Yes. It's kind of a spoiler territory, and I don't want to give it away.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So the inversion, like a scary thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of foreboding, you know, he calls the radio stations and they kind of laugh, you know, oh, it's the crazy Buster man. But he does these weird things where he breaks into the houses of millionaires who are, you know, these are their vacation houses. He breaks into their houses. He'll take all the pictures on the wall and like turn them upside down. He'll like steal, you know, some clothes. He won't vandalize anything.
Can I just say, I used to do that in high school.
Really?
In high school, what we would do is, as a practical joke to my friends in high school, we would like get to their house before they got to their house. So they'd leave to do run an errand or get a pizza or something. And we would take everything in that person's house and turn it upside down. So if there were books on the shelf, they'd be upside down, pictures upside down, all the furniture upside down. So they'd walk in the room and it'd be like, what the fuck did you guys do? So, and I did that once at the film department when I was at Wayne State University. Uh-huh. And there was a warrant out for my arrest.
Wow.
Because they thought that I had vandalized when we didn't really, we didn't break anything. We didn't do anything. All we did was turn everything upside down.
Yeah. Well, so, he also, he's not completely innocent. He also does like weird kind of random things. Like he takes a dump in somebody's crock pot, but he's not, you know, smearing shit on the walls.
It's not destructive.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. Okay.
It's kind of quirky. But anyways, the film kind of starts out introducing Buster as this mountain man who's on the run from the law. Like they finally caught him. And then it flashes back to, you know, his real name is Jonah, and he's this guy that works at a hotel, and he's just, you know, raising his family. He has a wife played by Caitlin Shile from You're Next. She's fantastic in this movie, by the way. It's really interesting because you kind of see the path that he takes to become Buster the Crazy Mountain Man. That would be a fascinating movie in itself, but it also has these really huge mind fucks. Like I was telling my friend earlier, it reminded me of the first time I saw Donnie Darko before Richard Kelly kind of ruined it and overexplained everything. It's one of those movies.
I liked it. I liked not knowing things. I think when you overexplain things, like, God, who is it? Our friend, Charlie DeLazarica.
Uh-huh.
He said, you know, I don't need to know how Han Solo got his vest.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think when you overexplain something that, and also as if anyone cared, I think that's the least interesting thing about Han Solo. But I do think that when you overexplain stuff that's weird, like, you know, I'm rewatching all the old Twin Peaks episodes in anticipation of the new Twin Peaks debuting later on in May. Like,
as am I.
You know, yeah, exactly. We're both watching it. Like, I think that that ruins something. I think that, like, there's something about it's kind of like maybe that's why the prequels really didn't work, is that the Star Wars prequels. How does this come back to Star Wars? We're talking about an indie movie starring that Mr. Robot guy.
Yeah.
And you should explain that he's the – did you mention that? Like,
I think I failed to. Rami Malek.
Because when you look at it, it's like, oh, it's the Mr. Robot guy in a weird movie. It makes sense. But – like, I think that's also why the Star Wars prequels failed, is because you took this thing that we had thought about for more than 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
You had just thought about what is the Clone Wars? Why did Anakin and Obi-Wan get in this horrible fight that led them to, you know, led to Darth Vader being this sort of, you know, shell of a man, you know, like what led to all of that? And I think our imagination is so much better than what George Lucas ended up delivering, that it was just, he kind of failed from the, he couldn't have succeeded no matter how good they were. So even if Jar Jar wasn't in it, anyways, I'm sorry. I'm just saying I agree. I am diverting. Here's what I'm doing. I'm trying to talk more because I have seen no movies this week. I've seen maybe one movie we can discuss, but so I'm trying to actually add something to the conversation, but all I'm doing is I'm derailing the conversation. I feel like you know what you should tell me.
Shut up, Chris.
I'm sorry. Go on. Whatever. If I feel like I have something to add, I'll add. But, you know.
No, I understand where you're coming from. I wouldn't compare this to the Star Wars prequels, because I think there was kind of an honest desire to know what was going on. I think this is more of kind of like a 2001 A Space Odyssey, where you see something and it doesn't make sense and you kind of formulate like your own ideas of what you saw, you know, and that for me was Donnie Darko. And then,
right,
you know, Richard Kelly would come out in interviews and just explain, well, this is what I meant by this. And it's like, no, man, leave it vague. Like,
right,
you're ruining it. But this is like, the shots were so beautiful. Like it's insane how gorgeous this movie is. Mm-hmm. It really, really impressed me. But it's this dark, funny, mind-blowing movie that I cannot recommend enough. There's spoilers that I don't want to get into it too much, but yeah, like definitely see Buster's Malheart. It's amazing. I want to watch Mr. Robot now because of it. That's one of those shows that everybody told me I need to check out. Like now it's on the top of my list because Rami Malek was so freaking incredible in it. Like his acting was just seeing him play a normal man and then watching that normal man become the crazy mountain man was really just like a clinic in acting. Like it was great.
Oh, wow.
It was great.
Well, let's talk about a movie that we both have seen.
Oh my gosh. Another great movie.
Well, I don't know.
No.
Well, look, okay. We're talking about Colossal.
Yeah.
And Colossal, from a new distribution company called Neon, which Tim League behind the Draft House has created.
Did you get the little 5-minute short?
No, I didn't.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't get it.
Like me and Joe McLean, he's a director. We got this 5-minute short from Neon Films and it was like about technology. It was like 5 short stories about technology.
That played at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. It was fantastic. Yes. It made me laugh. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So I love the aspect that like, yeah, so Neon is actually they play a short before the Colossal feature. And it's, what is it, 5 short films about technology. And when I say short, they're like under a minute.
Yeah.
Right? And they're really clever. Yeah. Make sure when you go to see Colossal, if you see it in the theater, or I'm sure it'll be available soon on digital platforms, make sure that you see that short film that is before Colossal is perfect.
I loved it.
Yeah, it was really good. So, I mean, I don't want to ruin it, but just makes fun of the way we use technology. It's like Black Mirror if Black Mirror were only funny. So, what? It's true.
No, yeah, so, I agree.
So, yeah, so make sure. So the short, can't rave about it enough, the short film that precedes Colossal. Colossal is, it's Anne Hathaway plays a woman in a relationship where she's kind of a loser. And gets dumped by her boyfriend, right?
Yep, played by Dan Stevens.
Yes, and has to move back home, right? And she's ends up working at a bar and befriends kind of people from her old neighborhood, one of them played by Jason Sudeikis. And they end up having a relationship. They're kind of and this group of men that are they're kind of assholes to her.
Yeah.
Kind of is that I mean they're subtly assholes, right? Like
I didn't pick up on that at first.
That they're subtly kind of assholes to her.
It becomes obvious, then, you know, later on in the film, but at first I didn't pick up on that.
But then what happens is there's this monster that's in what is it, Seoul?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Yeah. That keeps emerging emerges and does weird things. Not like it's like knocking down buildings and doing what normal monsters do. And first of all, I grew up with giant monster movies, so I love it. This is done in the traditional giant monster sense. I think they used a mix of digital effects and practical effects, but it is that sort of traditional person in a suit, right?
Yeah.
A giant monster. So even though I do believe it was enhanced by digital effects, but it has that sort of old school monster movie vibe.
Mm-hmm.
What Anne Hathaway's character discovers is that she I don't want to say she controls the monster, but the monster is mimicking her movements. Almost like the monster is this kind of manifestation of her feelings in the world. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I think you summed it up perfectly.
Yeah. So now what are your thoughts on it until we talk about the part where it started to go wrong for me?
I I'm really interested in where it went wrong for you, because I think this movie was one of my favorite movies of the year so far. I mean, it blew me away. It literally blew me away. Like I thought it told such a great story about a woman gaining her independence and kind of learning to stand up for herself and, you know, fight for herself and also grow as a person. And, right. You know, that's,
I think when you put it that way, I like it more.
And then you throw in the monster aspect and kind of the supernatural and I was sold. I was sold. I went in knowing nothing about the movie aside from it, that it had Anne Hathaway and it had something to do with the monster. Like, I didn't know that Jason Sudeikis was in it. I didn't know anything else about the movie. I went in blind. I came out like my mind was blown. And I'm really trying hard not to go into spoilers, because this is a movie that honestly you can discuss and go in depth about the themes of abuse and, you know, substance dependency. But I don't want to do that. I just want to.
She's kind of an alcoholic.
A little bit of a lush, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't want to ruin it for people, because I want people to go and see this movie. Like, I think going in blind is the way to do it. But please, you know, tell me where it went wrong with you. I'm interested.
I feel like the third act was a little weak.
Okay.
I just feel that it just came down to I can't go into spoiler territory because people will hate me, so I'm not going to do it. I feel like there's a conflict that's set up at the end that is just pretty predictable. And I felt that it just made it weak. I felt like there should have been some larger knowledge gained or larger understanding of the world, rather than coming down to this traditional type of conflict. Does that make sense? Am I being too tough? Because let me just say, I loved everything else about this movie. The production design was clever.
Yeah, it was made on a $15 million budget. $15 million budget.
And yeah, the concept is really strong. It's very different. The cast is great. I love Anne Hathaway. I don't care what the haters think.
I didn't even know she had haters. I love her too.
Yeah, I don't know. I think she was – I liked her in Interstellar. I liked her in Dark Knight Rises. I don't know. I'm a fan of Anne Hathaway. So that way when I – this is the thing. I'm really not sort of in touch with all that hater culture. So whenever like – and I'm a person who's critical, but hate I think is like a waste of energy. So when I see that like someone like – I didn't even know this person had people who hated them, that's kind of crazy. You know, so, but yeah, apparently there are people that don't like her. So, I am not among them. I think she's fantastic. So, and I like that she played this kind of like, it's very really unglamorous. I don't mean like she made herself ugly. She's just unglamorous. She's just kind of I don't know. She's sort of got like nothing going on in life. And it was, and
she's a failure.
She's a failure. Like the first half hour it's hilarious. So, and then especially as the concept evolves, I just think that when it got to the end, I just felt like, I wish there was more, you know, I wish it wasn't this, I don't want to say it as a typical Hollywood ending, but I felt like I could have predicted it.
Okay. Fair enough.
Am I being a jerk?
No, you're not. One thing that didn't work for me though, is they explained the connection between her and the monster dumb way with like a flashback.
Yeah.
That didn't work for me. I would have rather had them cut that out, keep it a mystery. Like just the flashbacks were just, they didn't add anything to it. As a matter of fact, I think it took away from the experience. But other than that, I loved it. I loved the character's journey from being somebody who's so dependent on other people. She starts out dependent on her boyfriend. She doesn't have a job. You know, she goes to town and she's dependent on, you know, her old friends and working at a job at a bar and dependent on them giving her stuff. And at the end, you know, not to give it away, but she becomes a completely different person. And I really, really, I enjoyed it.
She grows.
She does.
Yeah, no, but I like that. I like, look, this is what independent films do better than Hollywood. But then there are those Hollywood, rare Hollywood movies, and I would put Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 in that category. Because I felt like our last podcast, I felt like I fell asleep halfway through because I was just so tired.
Yeah.
Physically. But
and now we're both sick, so.
yeah, exactly. Sick and tired. I'm going to do a podcast anyways. But having seen Guardians now a couple more times, it really gets better and it has that feeling of an indie movie. Take away all the special effects and just if you just focused on the character relationships, I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy could have been an indie movie. Take away all the sort of intergalactic blah, 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 and just strip all the effects away, just these actors acting. When you focus on the relationships in it, it has that indie feel, and I think that comes from James Gunn. So, not to bring up, I'm not comparing, I'm just saying that's what indie films traditionally do well, and I think the reason that the Marvel movies have been a far more satisfying experience, say, than the recent crop of Star Wars movies, which basically play to your nostalgia, right? The Marvel movies are playing to emotion and feelings and kind of integrating the things that an independent film does well. That makes sense.
I agree. I really do.
Yeah.
This...
I feel like I should give you a button that zaps me with an electrical charge every time I derail the conversation to talk about Star Wars or something other than the subject at hand. I need to be reined in. Maybe I should be voted off this podcast. My conversations do tend to bounce around, but you know, I'll eventually make it back to the main point. So, but yeah, Colossal. Okay. Now that I'm kind of seeing it through your lens, I understand. I just felt that the ending was a little predictable for me and I wish it had, it could have ended on a more solemn note.
Well, okay.
And that would have been fine with me.
All right, I understand where you're coming from, but for me, the ending is a bit predictable. I will give it that, but it's a predictable ending that I wanted. Like, I was rooting for her.
Right.
So maybe that's the difference between you and I. Like, you know, I was satisfied with the predictable ending in this instance.
It's not the only difference. It's not the only difference, but I'm glad we got to see that movie. I mean, I was looking forward to it for so long. Like I thought here's what I want to see when I go to a movie. I want to see something I haven't seen before.
Yeah. Right? This is the most unique monster movie. I guess I've seen ever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, there's nothing like it. So, doesn't quite 100% succeed, but I feel that like for the original ideas and all that, like it's just top notch. So bravo is what I will say to that.
I agree.
Cool. Okay, so moving on. What's our next film?
So the next film is Deny Everything, and it's written and directed by Michael Eden, and it's about three friends and they try to dispose a body. And shenanigans ensue. They're being pursued by a tough Irish hitman. More dead bodies are showing up. It's a very dry British dark comedy. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I really enjoyed it. It's a well-shot movie. It has a very dry wit. There are some moments that had me rolling, like just some character moments and some situational comedy. It's a fun story, and all the actors are really, really great, especially this guy named Spencer Burroughs. And he plays the character of Richie. He kind of looks like Daniel Radcliffe a little bit, but he's kind of like this third wheel friend that gets kind of dragged into the mix. And he, like, there's something off about him. Like, he'll say stuff that's, you know, like really kind of makes you think that this isn't the weirdest, darkest situation he's been in. Mm-hmm. Like, he's no stranger to dead bodies, if that makes sense.
Right.
And Lawrence Kennedy plays Ashby, the badass Irish hitman, and he's just really commanding of the screen. He's like just this mean, like, but cold demeanored hitman. And I enjoyed the movie a lot, but the characters, the main characters, the main characters are Frank and Jeff, and Frank is the idiot. He's the guy that, you know, originally shows up with the dead body. And he's like, "Hey Jeff, you remember how you said, like, if I needed anything and I didn't like, no questions asked, you would help me. Well, here's a dead body. Like, we need to get rid of it." Jeff is kind of like this really mean, like, dickhead dude. And it's just, it feels like the characters don't really care for each other. And it makes me question, like, why they would be helping, like, why Jeff would be helping Frank in the first place. The film doesn't really explore that. It's just this weird, like, unspoken friend obligation. And I didn't really, like, I wanted more to it. Like, I wanted more, like, maybe, like, you know, how they became friends, or, you know, they're just really, like, mean to each other. And maybe, like, some moments of warmth would have, you know, kind of made it more enjoyable for me. There's also some really stupid decisions that the characters make, and the decisions
That's a pet peeve of mine, is when characters make choices in movies that are not that can completely derail a movie when, you know,
yeah,
that could completely derail a film.
Yeah. This happens about twice, and I don't want to give anything away. But it feels like these decisions are simply there just to further the plot and get the guys in trouble, or get the guys deeper and into more trouble. But it's a fun film. Like, it's a really good indie movie. And if you're a fan of British comedy, if you're a fan of that dry wit humor, I would definitely recommend it.
All right. You know what? I'm going to take your word for it.
All right. Good.
All right. Good. All right. What's our last film this week?
That was our last film, Chris.
That was our last film.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Look at this. We blazed this week.
We did.
Well, hey.
Hey, you forgot to mention the Get Out thing.
Oh, Get Out. Oh, well, this is a small thing. I happen to go to. Sometimes I get invited to do fun things, and I'll post it on my Instagram. But I went to a. It was sort of a celebration of the film Get Out, which is this like $5 million movie that made like $200 million at the box office.
And we both enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. And Jordan Peele was there and the cast was there. I mean, the entire cast was there, which was fantastic. So, and what they did was they had this party, and it was on, first of all, it's where they filmed the TV show Desperate Housewives. But they had turned it into the neighborhood from Get Out.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
Creepy. They had like that car from the beginning playing this creepy music. Then you came up and there were all these guys that had tea, and the tea all had this sort of lemonade tea, which was basically lemonade vodka. And they had like little spoons in it. And then they had like an art gallery. You could go to the sunken place, get your photo taken going to the sunken place. You'd go in this room, and that video that they played on the room to kind of in the room to hypnotize, the lead character, Chris, you could sit and watch that video. So they basically recreated, it was sort of like a live, you're going to the neighborhood from Get Out, and it was freaking creepy. And I'm already the kind of person that's creeped out when I'm around too many white people. I feel like if they're – no, and when I say that, here's what I mean by that, right? Like, I grew up kind of like, you know, lower middle class in Detroit. And I remember the feeling of whenever I would go to, say, someone in Michigan who lived in like Birmingham or Bloomfield Hills, I would always feel really uncomfortable. Like that feeling of like, these are just rich white people. Like, I don't feel like I fit in. Not as if I can identify with someone who's black, who grew up like having to deal with racism. Not that, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying I have been in situations where I felt uncomfortable being around a bunch of rich white people who just, I don't necessarily think like, right? And they assume because our skin is the same color that we all think the same things. It's not entirely true. So I had very different experiences growing up. So Get Out perfectly captured that. It was just so well done. And Jordan Peele, who I got to talk to for a few minutes, which was good. I mentioned one of my favorite sketches from Key and Peele, the one where Jordan Peele plays the guy. They're talking about doing a sequel to Gremlins. Have you seen this sketch?
Yeah, yeah, I've seen it.
Oh, you know which one I'm talking about. So he comes in and everyone's around this table. They're pitching ideas for Gremlins too. And they pitch the dumbest ideas for Gremlins, right? Just incredibly stupid ideas. And he just walked around and he goes, it's in the movie. So you got to look up Key and Peele Gremlins 2 on YouTube and you will see this video. So we chatted about that for a little bit and he was very open. I'm in this organization called the BFCA. So I'm fortunate enough to get invited to some of these events where they try and wine and dine you, which I appreciate. It's not going to sway my opinion anyway, but I do appreciate being included in things like that. So it was cool to see the actors there and to just hang out and just that is one of my favorite movies this year. Colossal's on your list, Get Out is on mine. I mean, it's Get Out. I would love to see, because I mean Jordan Peele is in like this elite group of black filmmakers who have been financially successful, and I would like to see him go on and do a lot more, because coming from comedy, it doesn't surprise me that he made a scary as hell, rooted in real fears, horror movie. So
yeah, despite the fact that I'm apparently the one that knocked it off of a perfect score on Rotten Tomato.
Oh, shut up. Would you give it like a 9 out of 10?
An 8 out of 10. I really...
Whatever. Yeah. It's not, I mean, I respect that. I mean, I'll battle you when it comes to something else. Mm. I think it's hard to argue that something's a perfect movie. You really want to save that for stuff that's just, you know, mind blowing, but you never know too. I think that you're, I mean, like sort of like, I look on the rating as like a first impression, right? Because there are movies that, you know, like not to go back to Star Wars was trashed when it first came out. Like Pauline Kael, prominent film critic at the time in 1977, hated Star Wars. And there were a lot of films that I could point to that got mediocre or mixed reviews when they first came out that are now hailed as masterpieces. I mean, they've stood the test of time. Mm-hmm. And that is something. And I like to think, or I hope that something like Get Out will stand the test of time. But even more than that, I hope that Jordan Peele ends up becoming ends up getting the power to actually make more films. Right. I mean, yeah, I think he's got some deal now with Universal. So that's good. I mean, this social event was on the Universal lot. So look, it's not like I'm living like this, like I'm going to all these fun things. I get to during certain times of the year, but I pretty much, my, as you are well aware, Anthony, my daily life is pretty boring. Sitting around. Most of what I've been doing this week is catching up on TV shows like Twin Peaks, and I just started the new Fargo. I know this is not movies. It's not movies, or I would, you know, we would talk about them. These are television, and Billions also. So these are in rotation on my and Veep and Silicon Valley and Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. So yes, I watch television as much. I do a lot of things sitting down. This is clear. Many of the things I do involve sitting down. So that's why I have a standing desk.
Fair enough.
All right, cool. Hey, thanks for listening to the Film Threat Podcast. Download, subscribe to the Film Threat Podcast. We're moving now to Fridays. The Film Threat Podcast is going to come out Fridays. We've been coming out on Thursdays. We feel we can do a better job if we come out on Fridays. If you send us a self-addressed stamped envelope to Film Threat 5042, Wilshire, that's Wilshire Boulevard, PMB 1500, Los Angeles, California 90036. I will return that self-addressed stamped envelope with some Film Threat stickers and maybe something else valuable if it's sitting around on my desk. I'll just throw it in the envelope. So do that. And a couple of you have already done that, which is great because that means you're actually listening to the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Follow Film Threat on Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. Please read filmthreat.com every day. New stories going up every day. Anthony, where can we find you on social media and that crap?
I'm on Twitter at This Game Cheats.
Awesome. And I think we can end the podcast by saying,
let's get out of here.
Let's get out of here.
Let's get out of here.